Started looking into it and looking into who else was covering the story and found nothing. The story is that there are ambulance deserts now across the country, and you know, you shouldn't be wondering whether an ambulance is going to turn up. I began to talk to people and interview people to see kind of where we were going with some sort of storyline, and it quickly expanded once people knew what we were looking to do. Early November, we're taking the film to Congress. We've been invited by the EMS caucus to show it in Congress. We'll talk about this in the film. You deal with a hideous thing that you've seen or smelled, or and then you're expected to go right back on the job.
Welcome to Respond to Resilience, along with my co-host Bonnie Rumley, LCSW EMT. I'm David Dashinger. On this episode, we'll be speaking with Brian E. Gilby, who's currently directing and producing a documentary film, Honorable But Broken, EMS in Crisis. She'll be speaking with us about her film and its role in building sustainable EMS. We invite you to like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc. and Responder TV, PBSRadio.com, all the podcast platforms, and go to our website, ResponderTV.com, for past episodes and guest information. We'll be right back to speak with Bryony after this.
In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers with vital information and resources, resilience strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Responder Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacy Raymond, and Bonnie Rumley, LCSW EMTB.
I worked in New York City in spring of 2020, and we were pretty hard hit. It was kind of like a 9/11 every day.
It was so bleak during that time, seeing the cries and screams of people, seeing the disparity that I'm the one working on the road, no one else is on the road, and I'm taking people to the hospital, and that may be the last time they're interacting with that family member or their loved one. It got to a point where I broke.
When the pandemic hit, many people worked from home. That wasn't an opportunity that 911 EMS was afforded.
They're the third uniformed service. Their job is as dangerous as police and fire. They have been right up in the front lines taking care of very sick COVID patients, constantly exposed to infectious disease.
We met people who have been in it for a lifetime, and they've never seen it more sort of broken than it is now.
Many people assume incorrectly that EMS is considered this quote-unquote essential service. And unfortunately, in many of the legislative frameworks, EMS was just left out.
One of the biggest challenges with EMS, the way that it is structured today, is the funding mechanism, the economic model.
All across this country, EMS agencies can't recruit, retain, and staff ambulances to a point to ensure the public safety.
Particularly rural areas don't have the required EMS coverage. When someone calls 911, there's no assurance that they can get an ambulance.
People always want to talk about the cost of responding to the call, whereas we should be talking about the cost of readiness to respond to the call.
We need to have full-time paid personnel that get adequate salaries, who have chosen this as a profession. This is a noble profession.
As an EMS worker, it's very difficult to live off of one salary. Therefore, I have to work at several different agencies just to pay my bills.
It doesn't translate into money per se under state law to simply call something an essential service. We have to rebuild the EMT, EMS system from the ground up to create a system that has enough money to sustain itself.
And we're very pleased to welcome Bryony Gilby. She's a former CBS News, 60 Minutes, and ABC producer and writer-editor for The Economist magazine group, Tribune Publishing, and Nextstar. She's currently directing and producing a documentary film called Honorable But Broken, EMS in Crisis, with Sarah Jessica Parker as narrator. And it'll be featured in the Workers Unite Film Festival in October or November. Probably by the time this airs, that's already taken place. Bryony is working with Boundary Medical to advocate for legislative changes on the national level and is a board member of the EMS Sustainability Alliance, a nonprofit. Bryony, welcome to Respond to Resilience.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you.
It's great to have you. And as someone who loves EMS as much as I do, and David as well, we're always happy to have our EMS folks on. And we're very, very curious about how you got into our world and what piqued your interest into the profession and the state of it at this moment.
So I actually came into EMS through my children. Well, three of them were in the Chappaqua Youth Corps. All three of them went on to become EMTs, and then my oldest a paramedic. So I was always sort of a peripheral part of that world. And one of the main interviews in our movie is Dan Blum, who was our neighbor. And he, in fact, was the inspiration for my kids getting involved in Chappaqua Volunteer Ambulance Corps. So I was surrounded. And it really was something that came to the fore, though, during COVID, when my oldest particularly was working as an EMT at the time, and just some of the things that she was dealing with were horrific, and just the range of dangers that she was facing, not just the virus, but stabbings and domestic violence, and going to nursing homes and declaring multiple people dead every night. And the, juxtaposition of that with her earning sort of $11-$12 an hour. And she just said, well, that's EMS, Mom. That's what we earn. And I just sort of did a double take, and I started looking into it and looking into who else was covering the story, and found nothing, which is pretty rare. There were certainly smaller stories about ambulance corps that had fallen apart, closed their doors, and these wonderful high school students who had taken over and were helping the town out, and the heroes that these high schoolers were, and that was the sort of the line, the tagline for the news story. And I just thought, that's not the story. The story is that there are ambulance deserts now across the country. You shouldn't be wondering whether an ambulance is going to turn up, or if they do, that you've got 16-year-olds. Not that there's anything wrong with 16-year-olds, but, people that are sort of new to the job, helping you in your worst situation. So, I began to talk to people and interview people to see kind of where we were going with some sort of storyline. And it quickly expanded once people knew what we were looking to do. Not just another kind of lights and sirens piece, but a genuine look into the realities of working in EMS. Mm-hmm. The doors opened, and we got a lot of support from where we are in Westchester, New York, but also from around the country.
Yeah, it's so important. I think, the expression we used to use is we're our own worst enemy, in that we always get the job done. We take care of what we have to take care of. But when we're suffering and challenged within our own agency, we don't really know how to share that out and how to educate and advocate for ourselves. So this is such an important film that you're producing, Bryony. So can you give us an idea? You mentioned Dan Blum. Give us an idea, other people or the range of people that you interviewed for this movie.
Yes, I think that what a lot of the public don't realize is how much EMS affects the healthcare system as a whole. I include myself in that group prior to this, but we thought it was important to interview not just the paramedics and EMTs, who of course are in the thick of it, but also the emergency room physicians who are dealing with patients that may not be arriving at the ER in a state that they could be arriving because they're not perhaps getting the pre-hospital care that they could. Or hospital administrators like Dan Blum, who said he was having issues releasing patients back to nursing homes because there weren't ambulances and crews available to transport them. So we talked to politicians as well. We talked to local politicians that are trying to change the law in New York State, which unbelievably to me does not consider EMS essential. And also weirdly does not consider police and fire essential, which, yeah.
It's mind-blowing.
Very complicated. And then we talked to people at the NAEMT at their EMS Day on the Hill to find out what was going on around the country. And it was parallel issues. So it's a nationwide problem. And I hope that we depicted that in the film.
Our greatest asset is a thinking, knowledgeable, well-trained, physically fit and healthy firefighter. It is the continual drive to be better, to improve and to never be satisfied with the status quo. Success begins long before the alarm comes in or the tones go off. Success is nothing new in the FDNY. We did not suddenly wake up one day and become good at what we do. We need enthusiastic leadership and training that has a clear understanding of what's at stake. That is teamwork. That is dedication. That is well-trained firefighters ready to go to work on game day. The time to train is now, before the incident or game day.
We've all seen the leader who's tactically proficient but lacks the people skills for true inspirational leadership. Cornerstones of Leadership, on and off the fire ground, discusses the soft skills necessary for success, both on and off the fire ground.
When our nation and communities around the world experience catastrophes and chaos, turn to Edie Darling, Ambassador of Peace. Exuding faith, providing hope, and sharing God's love through these challenging times, she brings healing solutions and meaningful dialogue. She heals communities by building a foundation of mutual respect and trust, working collaboratively at a round table of peace. Allow Edie Darling, Ambassador of Peace, to guide the way.
You know, I wanted to go back to something David had said before, which is that EMS providers don't have time to discuss their issues or take it anywhere. And I'm sure you've come upon this in your research, but many EMS providers work two, three, sometimes four jobs, a combination of paid and per diem and part-time just to make ends meet. So when you're working 90 to 100 hours a week and have that amount of jobs, there's no way you have time or energy to advocate externally for the situation you're in. So it becomes a very vicious cycle for people. And part of that is because the pay is so low and needing to work extra hours just to be able to live the life that other people live with a regular 9-to-5 job. So I'm interested to hear more about what your ultimate vision is. It sounds like you've done a lot of research and really had a deep dive into the world. What is your ultimate goal?
So I'm kind of a policy wonk at heart. My education is in politics and international relations. And so I feel like I'm almost going back to those roots. Early November, we're taking the film to Congress. We've been invited by the EMS caucus to show it in Congress. I'm hoping we have a good turnout. I don't really have a specific end goal other than taking this as far as I can take it. I'm certainly not naive enough to think I have any of the answers. I know it's very complicated. I know there are federal and state changes that need to be made, and those are not easy. But my primary goal is just to broadcast the message, broadcast the story. It's funny, I was just looking at a New York Times story yesterday about violence in the emergency rooms and hospitals. Mm-hmm. And it was a terrible story. Doctors and nurses that had been attacked and what they were dealing with. And I thought, but I kept thinking, yeah, but try doing that on a quarter of the salary with no healthcare benefits to go and get yourself stitched up or go and get yourself some therapy. And I feel like if I can help amplify this particular message of EMS, this is one of the few things that unites probably everybody in EMS, whether you work as a volunteer or as a paid responder or for a hospital. The voice needs to be heard. Things need to change. Things are not changing. Even the pandemic did not change what's going on. So if we can get the message out, I mean, maybe there'll be sort of a grassroots movement from people outside of EMS to help out.
You know, I think that's so admirable that obviously you've been personally impacted by EMS with your children, but the fact that you would take on this mission for a population that would love to fight that fight for themselves, but often don't have the resources, don't have the time. So I have to thank you for what you're doing. You're being a voice for a population that certainly needs one. And I think you're right. The EMS system is really in crisis, especially after COVID. The amount of people that have left the profession or call out of shifts because they're physically or mentally exhausted and fatigued. We're seeing so much substance abuse, PTSI. Every colleague that I have who works with first responders, we are all packed full. There aren't enough of us to go around. So when you say that things have been worse since COVID, I can't underline that enough. And I was an EMS provider during COVID and the leader of my agency, and it was grueling, to say the least. So I'm happy that you're shining a light on that in your documentary, because people need to see what's happening out there.
Absolutely. And in fact, once we had a lot of the initial interviews in place, my co-producer, Rich Diefenbach, came across a story about a young EMT in New York who had taken his own life during COVID, reached out to the mother who amazingly agreed to be part of the film. And we used that story as sort of, you know, the worst case scenario, but a very good example of what is actually going on in EMS. This poor young man, just really bright, but there is a persona in EMS of, you know, being the helpers and not needing help. It's a little bit of machismo. I think it probably is across all first responder agencies. And he just didn't feel like he could ask for help, and he couldn't afford help. He was clearly suffering mentally, couldn't help people, just out of the academy. And he was devastated, and he just probably had COVID as well. He was not feeling well. So in a way, that is sort of indicative of the system as a whole, that we're really failing people in EMS. I mean, to the point that of their very survival, not just of the agency, but of the people themselves. His mother, Eileen, I thought, was incredibly brave to share that with us and with everybody who's seeing the film. But for her, I think it's a way for John to continue helping people. And that's the only way that she can sort of get put one foot in front of the other each day, to be honest.
Yeah, well, that's continuing a legacy in a beautiful way then. And can you give us like a perspective now? You probably have some good perspective having spoken with so many diverse people, not only in New York, but in other locations. How did EMS get into the broken state that it's in now?
I know there are much bigger brains than mine that could probably answer that in a better way, but my understanding is that because of the way EMS developed in sort of 60s and 70s, really, as a transportation agency, it was paid as a transportation agency, taking, you know, patients or bodies to the hospital or the morgue. Now that has become this incredibly dynamic medical force, they're still paid for transportation, not for the care that they give. So a lot of the help that was given or is given on a daily basis, but especially during COVID when it was discouraged, bringing patients to the hospital was discouraged for obvious reasons. None of that work was compensated for, was paid for. So that's where we are. I need to really redefine and the economic model of how EMS is reimbursed. That sounds so easy and simplistic, but you're going up against, obviously, Medicaid, Medicare, state, federal, private insurance. I did find some hope in the fact that they were able to bring a lot of those people together that would be involved in those decisions for the No Surprise Bills Act. Paraphrasing the name of it, I think, but which obviously carved out ground ambulances. but I think, I don't know, maybe it's a question of educating people on what needs to be done, and maybe it's a question of just standing on the steps of Congress and sort of, you know, doing a Jon Stewart and crying, you know, saying shame on you. This, if you don't know about it, it's one thing. If you know about what's going on and you're not doing something about it, you know, shame on you.
Come on. Check it.
I think there's a real lack of awareness of what EMS providers do. And some of it, I think, is, you know, from the movies and this whole transportation notion. There's a stigma. A lot of people think that people are ambulance drivers. Yes. They really have no idea the amount of responsibility on that person in the back. And whether you're 17 alone back there with a code or 75, you know, you are back there and that person's life is in your hands. And so I think that the general public doesn't think about us first responders until they need us.
Right.
And then their eyes are open as to, wait a minute, I called 911 at 3:55 in the morning and four people showed up into my living room. And why
they're not from the town that I live in, right? They're from mutual aid from another town. Like, what's up with that?
Right. There's so much that people do not think about us until they have to, right? So we have to shift the awareness. And that's why I like what you're doing with this documentary. We're shifting the awareness instead of just learning about us in your dire straits. Let's give the education before people need us so that they understand the dynamic care that's provided for. They think about paramedics that are providing advanced life support in helicopters. I mean, the profession is incredibly dynamic and has grown so much from those early stages that you described before. So we need to definitely raise awareness. We try to do that here on this podcast. And when we find someone like you who has a similar mission, we love it and we support everything you do. We love the partnership.
Yeah, I think it's very short-sighted to, first of all, to dismiss EMS practitioners as ambulance drivers. It's just so insulting and something you would never do to, you know, a police car driver or a fire truck driver.
Right.
I do think that a lot of people assume that they just kind of pick you up and take you to the hospital and then everyone in the hospital takes care of you. So there's not a real understanding of what happens in the back of that ambulance and how important that is, not just for survival, but for your recovery rate. And of course, the ER doctors want the patient to arrive at the hospital in the best condition they can possibly be in. The earlier you get that care, the better chances you have of surviving the ER and getting out of hospital sooner. So it's short-sighted in the way that, you know, the people involved in EMS are being treated as second or third class citizens, but it's also short-sighted in, promoting the fluidity in the healthcare system, because you will have people getting in and out of the hospital sooner, and you will have better rates of recovery, of getting back to, you know, the nursing home sooner. There are all kinds. We saw during COVID that there are all kinds of applications that EMS can get into, like community paramedicine, that keeps people out of the ER, or taking them to, you know, urgent care centers rather than the ER, giving inoculations, giving COVID tests. I've been working with a doctor in Florida, Dr. Peter Antevi, on an article about pre-hospital blood transfusions, getting people who are bleeding out transfusions in a pre-hospital setting.
Right.
It's just, I mean, the possibilities are endless. And a lot of it comes from military strategies and protocols, and people support those. So I just feel like, you know, there's a whole world out there that can really improve through EMS, improve the healthcare system and make it much more affordable, much more fluid, much more efficient.
We've looked at recruitment and retention quite a bit, and although law enforcement and fire to a certain extent are having their own crisis with recruitment and retention, I would say that EMS is probably even in a more dire straits with the burnout rate. Sometimes we hear 2 years is like the sort of average lifespan of a EMT, and keeping people in there, I mean, without benefits for retirement, for healthcare, without a good pay, the burnout from working those extra jobs that Bonnie was referring to, you're losing people at an alarming rate. And why not work at Home Depot, where you don't have the responsibility of, you know, basically someone's life hanging in the balance, you know, based on your skills and your actions? It's a lot to take on. So what are your thoughts, Bryony, about recruitment and retention in EMS? What kind of things do you think are possible to make some changes?
It's really tricky until you change the economic model, I think, because I think there are a lot of professions out there, like you were saying, where you can just make you can make better pay without the danger. But if you really want to go into helping people and being part of your community, there are other jobs, nursing, being a PA, social work, you know, going to the fire department or going to the police department. I know that's, you're saying there are issues there too, but there are plenty of opportunities to do that in other professions, and that would probably satisfy those same desires to you know, to help people that pay better.
Right. And have unions.
And have unions. Yeah.
Right. The thing that's very troubling to me as a mental health provider of first responders and as an EMS provider is the mental health of these folks. And people are committing suicide. Mm-hmm. We don't have wonderful data on EMS. We have some data, but we don't think that our data is accurate. It's very, very alarming. The amount of them who have PTSI or substance abuse, anxiety, depression. We're literally putting these people in that situation. And the nature of the calls that are going on in the world, and a lot of people don't realize this either, the nature of the calls are getting much more complicated and much more dangerous. There's a lot more violence against providers specifically. violence around providers. You're also talking about a profession where decades ago you stayed outside and waited until the police secured the scene. Now we have EMS providers training to be in the warm zone of shootings, of active shootings, wearing, you know, ballistic vests and helmets and running in there. So we're asking a lot of people, and I'm so troubled by the state of their mental health. And that's one of the reasons we do this podcast, because it's not okay. You know, and I personally can't go to bed at night and put my head on my pillow not knowing I've done enough about this every single day. You know, people, I blast everybody I know about this. I blast my social media. It's just so critical. I can't say enough about it.
It is. I think the effects are acute and cumulative. And, you know, when you say you're working two or three or four jobs, you know, you deal with something. I think we talk about this in the film, certainly, that you deal with a hideous thing that you've seen or smelled, or, and then you're expected to go right back on the job. And there is this sort of mentality of, I don't need help. I don't want to admit that I'm struggling. And what's the alternative, really? I really have to work. I have to make money. I have to keep working. But yeah, it is taking its toll. And that was why the story of John Mondello was just so powerful in sort of describing what's going on. But yeah, and we talked to union leaders. We talked to the union of New York, FDNY EMS, who said that they don't have the mental help, the support that they need. You know, EMS is different from the other agencies, and they need to have support that's different. It's just inadequate. I mean, FDNY is just, New York City, I should say, is a terrible example of how to treat EMS providers. It's just on every level that the calls are so beyond what the fire and non-fire related calls are. And the budget is a quarter. And they're not part of, the mayor came in promising he'd do something, and he hasn't. And, you know, I think that's probably true of most major cities. I think the fire budget is probably double EMS budget in most cities. And they are dealing with much fewer calls. It just, I'm not sure where the authority comes from, though, to correct that, other than a concerted level, a state-by-state effort to change the way it's perceived and change the way it is structured, and then sort of go build from there to a national, certainly need a single national federal agency that's overseeing it. It's probably not the DOT anymore.
I think the onus is on states to make sure that every first responder, including dispatchers, animal control, everyone is covered by these PTSD and PTSI bills. You know, you cannot leave branches of people hanging out in the breeze. You know, when they vote in these laws, it should cover everyone. And the peer support model we know is extremely effective in first responder world. The peer support teams do a lot of wonderful work in terms of debriefing, referrals. And so we know that model works. So in my view, there should be mandates for every branch of first responders to have peer support available. And I know that puts an incredible onus on departments. You know, how do we put this training together? How do we get this team together? who monitors it? What do we do when someone is suicidal? There's an immense amount of work that has to go into it, but it's just as important as the gear in the bag and the gear on that truck. Because if I don't have my brain, I can't use all of that gear properly and effectively. And ultimately, that's going to impact the patient that I'm on the way to save right now. Right. So to me, everything is connected so deeply. And those are areas that I think would really help if those mandates were in place.
Right. And they're not unknown variables.
Right.
You know, they're these mental health care and it exists in so many different industries. So there are examples that you can take from and learn from, and you know, it's not, you're not reinventing the wheel. Some of it may be a question of funding, I would imagine. But yes, I think it's not just the economic structure that needs looking at. I think it's the whole organizational structure as well, because there's certainly a lot of people leave their agencies because of the leadership.
Right.
I know there are organizations out there that are working to improve that, that are working on building leadership programs. Certainly NAEMT is doing that. EMS Leadership Academy, they're trying to facilitate leadership roles. But again, I think until you're paying a proper salary with proper benefits, I don't know that you're necessarily going to attract people to stay in those roles, stay in and fill those roles long term.
Right.
Well, let's shift gear to a lighter topic, and that's you have Sarah Jessica Parker narrating this film. How did that come about?
So we had a wish list of a big name to narrate the film. We just thought that would be a terrific way to get more, you know, a bigger spotlight on what we were trying to do. And I had been speaking to this wonderful paramedic in Yonkers, a union, her local union president, whose name is Alana Badgley. And she was on the cover of Time magazine during the pandemic. And she just was a really well-spoken advocate for EMS reform, and she had reached out to me. She was starting an organization called Make EMS Essential, and she just reached out to me to say, how can we help each other? How can we amplify your message? And, you know, what can we, I put her in touch with some of the politicians that I'd been in contact with and sort of helping their cause. And along the lines, we became friends, and along the lines, along the road, she reached out and said, do you have a big name yet? We said, no, we've got several irons in the fire. But she said, well, my uncle is a sound engineer. I'm hoping getting his title right. And he has been working with a number of Broadway actresses for a long time. You know, I can reach out and see if any of them would be interested in doing that. And the top of the list was, of course, Sarah Jessica Parker. And I thought, well, let's give it a go. Let's give it a try. And sure enough, she said, you know, she's incredibly busy. It was in the summer that she recorded with us, but she was launching another show and various other things. And even to the very day that we recorded, we weren't sure she was going to be able to make it. But she turned up in this, the studio in Chinatown. She came by herself by subway after, I think, interviewing with Howard Stern and various other shows. I mean, bless her. And she came and she gave us, she had read it. She'd seen the film. She liked it. She wanted to support it. And she wanted to support this sound person that's worked with her since she was 16 years old. And she's just consummate professional. She read everything three times that we wanted her to read. She had suggestions for different nuances and different wording. And so it's sort of a collaborative effort on the day. And it really launched us into the public sphere beyond EMS. So I'm incredibly grateful for her for taking that time, which she really didn't have, and doing this for us.
I've heard that you're still in the process of finishing the film. And can you give us an idea of what the arc is, like what you see as the genesis from the beginning, middle, and end? Where's this going to take us when we watch it?
So it takes the viewer through the structure of EMS, defining what is an EMT, what is a paramedic, what happens in the back of an ambulance. It looks at why people get into EMS, the joys, the privilege, the sense of being part of a community. And then it sort of ventures into the realities, the dangers, and the pay structure and why it is that way. What EMS today and the history of EMS that has created the system we have today, for good or for better or worse. Mm-hmm. And then we take a look at New York State and Westchester County as an example of just how siloed EMS agencies can be, often are. And we expand from there to across the country with the help of the NAEMT and their board from across the country talking about many, many similar problems and also problems that are specific to each state, homelessness, increased violence, the fentanyl epidemic. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of finish on a slightly high note of, you know, what's being done, what can we do, how can we help? So it was hard to keep it to an hour, to be honest. I think you could probably do an hour on any one of those issues. Mm-hmm. But I think hopefully we told the story in a way that is understandable to people, to the general public.
And how do you envision rolling this out to the public? Are you going to start with some film festivals? Are you going to go for Netflix? Like, what is your vision on how you're going to roll everything out down the line?
Yes, it's a steep learning curve for me. I'm figuring out. But the film festivals is a nice way to get a little bit of buzz, a little bit of interest mm-hmm. building. And it's very important to us that we get traffic on our social media sites, because what we can do with that is take it to a distributor and say, you know, you've got this built-in audience of 20,000 followers. So, we're certainly not there yet. A lot of the big platforms like Netflix and Amazon don't take outside material anymore. And that's a real shame. They just don't do it. So we have been trying to work with local stations. We've applied to join the pool of PBS, CBS, NBC, and ABC in the local New York market. And from there, if we get a good response, if we get in and get a good response, then they'll put us on a national pool of programs that can be accessed. In a perfect world, I would love to stream it across the country on a platform that's free to people in EMS, but that will undermine our efforts to get it on a national platform outside of EMS. So I'm sort of juggling those two conflicting interests right now. But that's the pull is to really, as much as I want people in EMS to see it and feel seen, I do want other people to know about it.
Right.
So certainly if we have film festivals, I'm advertising those. People can come and see the film in person. I'm trying to do a few private showings in cities around the country. But yes, certain terms of streaming it through YouTube or something like that, not yet.
Share with us, please, where people can find you, the film, your social media channels.
Absolutely. We're on Honorable But Broken on Facebook and Instagram, hashtag Honorable But Broken. And on Twitter or X, it's hashtag Honorable Broken. So we're posting daily on what's happening there. You can reach out to me personally on those. I'm answering messages all the time from people who've reached out through those sites. So a lot of moving parts and a lot of expenses. So
yeah,
and that's another thing. If people feel that they can contribute in any way financially, we have a site on ForGiving, the number 4 and giving. That's also on our social media sites. That you know, to contribute. It all helps to, because some of these local markets that I'm saying we're trying to get into, you actually have to pay to get your film seen.
Right.
So right. It's a little backwards in that way, but everything helps, you know, with marketing and distribution. So.
Well, we can't thank you enough for being here and for fighting for us. It means the world to EMS providers. And I hope that the awareness that you raise can lead to some real changes because it's needed. And thank you.
Absolutely. I'm an advocate for life. I got pulled in. So
absolutely.
Whatever I can do, I will do. Yeah.
I'd love to see this to be like required watching for any government official, politician, person elected to office, and you know everything from a small village up to you know state and national level. It seriously is an epidemic issue for a vital service for our society. So thank you so much for shining a light on it, and wish you continued success. And we look forward to seeing the finished film when it's done.
Good. Thank you very much.
So remember to like and subscribe on our YouTube channel. It's Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness, Inc., and Responder TV, bbsradio.com, all the podcast platforms, and visit our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes and guest information. Till the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself. Take care.